speaking of San Antonio, about 7 years ago, there was a project at Lackland Air Force Base designed to tackle terrorists on the digital front. It was one of many projects later moved to a top-secret facility outside Washington. Today, they call it the U.S. Cyber Command. Among other tasks, this defends U.S. military networks. Well, in recent days, the death cult that calls itself the Islamic State scored yet another publicity coup with the release of a hit list. The posting included about 100 soldiers' names, addresses, photos, other personal information, and it asked sympathizers to, and I quote here, kill them in their own lands, behead them in their own homes, stab them to death as they walk their streets, thinking that they are safe. Joining us now, Paul Shari. He is a former Defense Department official, now fellow at the Center for a New American Security. The Pentagon spent the last several days notifying servicemen and women who are on this list, Paul, to be on their guard. But publicly, they're sort of taking a different tack. They're saying, you know, I think you could say they're downplaying this. How serious of a threat is this ISIS posting?
Well, what we're hearing the government say publicly is that there's no specific threat against any of these individuals. So that there's been a call to go out and carry out attacks, but there's no evidence of a plot or a conspiracy or any direction that there are individuals that might carry these out. But there are general force protection concerns for U.S. service members. There have been lone wolf attacks of this type in Canada and in Great Britain against military personnel in those countries. And so it's certainly something to be concerned about, not just for these individuals, but for military personnel writ large, to be aware of their surroundings and to not stand out and make themselves a potential target.
Right now, the Defense Department maintains that there wasn't some breach of servers at the DOD, that Defense Department data has not been compromised. Are you convinced that's true?
The fact that they've come out and said that suggests that I would think that's probably true. What's more likely is that they've got this information from service members who've been quoted in news sources or through things like Facebook and other social media, Twitter. And they've been able to just cull together lists of individuals. While it's not clear that these are people that are really tied in any operational sense together, it's not clear that these are people that are necessarily involved in operations against ISIS. So it looks like they seem to have pulled together sort of a random list of names of actual military personnel that they could find through open sources online, which again is a suggestion that military personnel should pay attention to operational security, not just physically in their person, but also their digital presence online.
Yeah, well, I know that the Defense Department gives tips to service members, you know, how to use social media without exposing too many details about your personal or military life. But, you know, as you think about it, that seems to stand in stark contrast to what's happened at other times in history when the U.S. has been at war and outright prohibited certain kinds of communication by soldiers altogether. Why wouldn't it make sense for the protection of troops, if nothing else, to come down with rules sharply curbing the use of something like social media?
Well, I think the military has tried to balance those over time. And of course, they've done so in an environment where the information landscape has changed dramatically over the last 15 years or so. I certainly know, you know, there were times early in the war when I was deployed as a service member when some of the restrictions were frustrating. Now, some of them are quite reasonable, things like not posting the location of units overseas or movement of forces, and those are really important. But the Defense Department has loosened up restrictions on things like Facebook and Twitter over time, particularly to allow service members to communicate with their families when they're deployed, which has been important, especially as we've had people conducting repeat deployments back-to-back over, you know, more a decade or more.
A lot has been made of ISIS's savviness, I suppose you could say, using social media. And on the one hand, there's this image of, you know, sort of evil geniuses with laptops in the desert. Or, I mean, you could look at it in terms of social media itself, that the nature of social media is to sort of distort perceptions, make things seem bigger than they are in reality. Which do you think it is?
I mean, I think from a, you know, sort of a technical standpoint of hacking or something, they're certainly not doing anything that looks very impressive at all. I think in terms of, you know, sort of leveraging social media tools and the new information landscape and being able to communicate to inspire would-be lone wolf attackers, ISIS is relatively savvy, and they understand that what they're directing is not just an organization but is a movement. And I think that's an important shift from, say, what al-Qaeda looked like on 9/11 as a network of individuals, of cells, to now what ISIS is today, which is really much more of a social movement trying to radicalize people or leverage people who are already radicalized. And they're able to harness the incredibly decentralized nature of information technology to try to do that.
Paul Sherry is a fellow at the Center for A New American Security. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.